Welcome to Journeys to Orthodoxy, a production of the Icon New Media Network, where Orthodox Christianity is the future of American spirituality. Journeys to Orthodoxy can be heard on the Orthodox Christian Network at www.myocn.net. I'm your host, Jacob Lee.
This week on Journeys, Dionysius Patamidas from Greece. Welcome to Journeys to Orthodoxy. I'm your host, Jacob Lee. And today, via Skype, coming in from Greece, I have Dionysius Patamidas. How are we doing, Dionysius?
Hello, Jacob. We're doing just fine. Hello, everybody.
Good. And Dionysius, you are of Greek descent?
Yes, I'm what you'd call 100% Greek. I was conceived on the island of Zakynthos and born in the center of Athens.
There you go. And today we're going to talk about your rediscovering your Orthodox faith.
Yeah, that was quite a journey.
And so let's get into it. Now, you were born in Greece. Your parents were Orthodox?
Yes, absolutely, both of them.
Did they go to services regularly, or was your family?
Regularly, especially my father would never miss a service.
And by regularly, daily, on Sundays?
Always on Sundays and some other days, too, during the week. We actually lived from... The church is across the street, so you were actually in the church all the time.
And did you grow up serving in the church or doing anything
in
the church?
Yes, I was an altar boy for as long as I can remember.
You were very active as a youth.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Something that really kept coming with me, no matter what and no matter where I was. I always had this feeling that I had to find a church, you know what I mean? When I was at places where there was no church, I really felt a void in me.
Got it.
It was quite a strange feeling, actually. I could not locate it, I could not identify it. But then when I found out of what it was that I missed, no matter where I came to, then it was so great to find out that it was the church I was looking for.
So what led you away from the Orthodox Church?
Well, as unbelievable as it might sound, what led me away from the church was nothing spectacular. It was not that I saw this or that that made me go away. What made me go away is my own, what should I call it, greed. I wanted to, was 14 years old or something like that, I wanted to make my own money, and I started working during the summertime. And then there was this guy who told me of a job that I could have on Sundays. Very nice guy, actually. And I grew a habit of it, working on Sundays. And that was a bad habit. Because then I started neglecting my church going. I wouldn't go on the other days because I had to go to school. And on Sundays, then I would work. And it was a very nice walk to work and a very nice walk from work. And it was a very nice place to work at, just below, beneath the Acropolis of Athens. Very nice surroundings. And I enjoyed that very much, both before and after work. But my church life disappeared, so to say. And then I would only come to church for major feasts, but I didn't feel at ease with that. I didn't enjoy it. Because I think it's very important to attend services regularly in order to enjoy them. If you come only now and then and no regular... not following any regular schedule, I think you cannot enjoy it. It's kind of like baseball. If you lose a lot of games, then at the end you don't know how the team is doing, in a way.
So if you're not following the sport or not following along with the church life, then you have no connection with it.
Yes, and I think our church is so wise, it is so divine. There was this ancient rule that had you stayed away for no reason from the Sunday services for 3 consecutive Sundays, then you were excommunicated or something like that. Of course, this would not be possible, thank God, to apply today, but it only tells us how important the church knows that it is for us to be there and be united with our Lord. I wish I had never started working on Sundays. I wish to all those listening to us now, if they work on Sundays, please have a talk with your spiritual father. Maybe he could tell you of where to use that money that you make on Sundays. It's not good money, and it's not my idea. It's found out Saint Cosmas et Tolos is telling us that we shouldn't use that money. This money is of no use, and I have experienced that in my own life. So after finishing school, yeah, sorry.
Oh, no problem. No, your work that you were doing, it wasn't anything nefarious. It was just general retail sales?
Yeah, of course. It was regular stores, paying taxes and everything, in a pedestrian zone. And people on Sundays, they came to this zone to do their shopping not because they thought we shall not attend services at the church, but because it was like an excursion, you know. It was like going somewhere Sunday morning. And they would come by, and it felt like the right thing to do at that time. But looking back, this has indeed been a mistake.
So it was kind of like, shall we say, years in the desert?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what it felt. You know, the beauty of the surroundings, having the possibility before and after work to walk through places that are 2,500 years old, they give you this sensation that a sensation of eternity, so to say. And this was, in a way, doing up for the sense of eternity that we, the real sense of eternity that we gain by participating at divine liturgies or other services at the church. And I always felt this void within me. No matter what I did, no matter how many things I learned, or no matter how much money I earned, I did not feel complete. I was feeling like I was missing an essential part of me. Therefore, when I finished school, I studied at higher level. Tourism Business Administration, and when I finished that, I worked at the local Marriott, and it was like a great achievement. I mean, first job at the Marriott, everybody envied me that, but I didn't feel like it was something special. I moved to Rhodes, worked there too at a hotel. I still did not feel anything special about it. So I started seeking further education, and I decided to move to Denmark, to Copenhagen, and study Indo-European comparative linguistics there. And God has works in mysterious ways. This is a phrase I will never get tired of repeating, because I took all this way, 3,000 kilometers to the north. For us here in Europe, this distance is extreme. It is a very long distance. For you, it might sound a joke, but for us here, 3,000 kilometers or so is something very far away. It's at the other end of the continent, as a matter of fact. So I moved to Denmark, and there I started studying. I got the necessary papers, diplomas, to be able to study at the university, language diplomas, within 45 days or something. And I tried to begin right away, but they wouldn't accept me right away. It took me 4 years before they accepted me at the university. And those 4 years were really, had I begun from the moment I arrived there, I would probably not be sitting here talking with you and with our listeners. I would probably have been a comparative linguistics researcher at the University of Copenhagen or something like that. But those 4 years that I thought I lost were essential, in the sense that I started 4 years too late with my studies. And well, I'll come back to that. At the university, when I started studying there, what we studied was mostly old languages, extinct languages.
Give me some examples.
Yeah,
give me some examples.
Gothic, which is an Eastern Germanic language that is extinct more than 1,000 years now, has been extinct. Old Slavonic, some of your listeners probably are familiar with that. If they have attended a service at a Russian parish, they have surely heard Old Slavonic. I have studied that, and I can read that, and I could also write things in that language. Old Breton. Breton is a language spoken in France, supposedly spoken in France. My teachers, when they were there visiting the place in order to do some research, they wrote to me a postcard in Breton telling to me that it's so funny, we're here in Bretagne, and if we want to speak with somebody, if we want to write to somebody in Breton, we have to write back to Denmark to a Greek. I still have that postcard somewhere. In Breton, of course, they wrote it. And other extinct languages, and one of the living languages we studied there was Lithuanian. I had wished we had Latvian at the university, but we had not Latvian, we had only Lithuanian. And see how God works. What do you think, Jacob, was the book we used to read from in all these languages? Can you guess? If you guess right, you have one of my books for free.
Well, you know, I kind of know the story, so I'll spill the beans, but I think it was the Gospel of Matthew.
Exactly. The Gospel of Matthew is what I read, not just a few hours a day, but every single day, seven days a week, as I really had to study all the time in order to catch up with the other guys who started 5 or 10 years earlier than I did. So every single day I had to study the gospel. Can you imagine that? I not consciously, but I ran away from the church, which was just across the street from where I was raised. And where do I come? To a different place, a strange place, very nice place, by the way. Nice people, and I am studying the gospel in all different languages, and I have to go back to the Greek text all the time, so I really, if there is a gospel I know, it is Matthew's. And that was very nice, because our professor, very nice guy, typical Dane, he took the whole thing just like a text and nothing more than that. A very valuable text, as you had the best translations in all these extinct languages. Nothing was better than that to study in order to learn, really learn those languages, essential for the research of our studies. And he could time and again find out that I was pondering upon the importance of what was written in there. And he could not hide his, how should I call it, discontent, if there is such a word, with the fact that I was really taking into my heart what was written there. He thought I should only concentrate on the linguistical forms found in those translations. But I could see there was what I was looking for, and there it had been all the time. Only I had not had the time in my search for it to find it. So it was kind of a relief to find out that what I was looking for had found me. I was really surprised. The only language I didn't like to study was Sanskrit, because we had to study books that were really propagating idolatry. And I really can remember that we had a very nice teacher, but I didn't like studying it. I didn't like it. It felt wrong in a way. In various ways, not just one way. And so I concentrated on the other languages that where we were using the gospel, and actually got some very good grades. I decided to change the subject and change the studies, and I decided to finish modern Greek and Lithuanian. Comparative with Danish, and then I got my bachelor in modern Greek Lithuanian, I finished some months ago, actually one day before our fourth born child was born. I received with the post here in Greece my master's degree in Balkan studies. So now I'm an expert in the Balkans, I have studied many more languages, and
I think you know 20 languages in all?
Some more, maybe, yeah. It's not that much. It sounds like a lot, but it's not. If you really consider that there are some 6,000 languages in the world, I only know what? What is that? It's nothing.
Well, for most of us, you know, knowing two languages is quite a lot. So, you know, to know 20, and you received an award for your
I received the first prize for 2001 was the year of the European year of languages. And there was organized a contest under the auspices of the President of the Hellenic Republic of Greece, so to say, and I got the first prize. I didn't know I was to receive 3,000 euros, and I was not intending to participate at the ceremony, but the guy who was organizing the whole thing, when I mentioned that I wouldn't come the next day, the first day that was more from dawn to late evening, night, actually, we had exams the whole day, and the guy, when we finished, he said, "I'll take you home, don't you worry." I had our first born son and my wife with me, and I remember we got to church during a break we had there, a Russian church, actually. We have just been there 2 weeks ago. And he said, "You have to return tomorrow. You have to participate tomorrow." I said, "Okay, if you ask it, I'll do it. It's no problem." And the next day I was awarded this prize, and the prize included 3,000 euros. It's the best money I've made in one day.
and the prize was?
And the prize was 3,000 euros.
Oh, no, I mean the name of the award.
Polyglot, first prize of the Polyglot contest or something like that, I don't remember. I have never received it, actually. They gave it to me, and then I put it somewhere there, and I've never taken it home, actually. I must be the only participant that did not take the actual paper home. And most of the money I used to thank him who has given me this gift. And I still remember what I mentioned to the people gathered there, the journalists that were gathered there, that no matter how many languages you speak, if you have no love, and by love is meant loving Christ's love, you know, St. Paul, the Corinthians, then you're just making sounds, so to say. Kimvalo alalazon. I think that no matter how many languages you speak or understand or use or whatever, if you have no love, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. It's all waste of time, actually. It's very nice to speak many languages, but I at least say the same things in all languages.
Now, Dionysius, you were studying these languages, became familiar with the Gospel of Matthew, and how did that translate into bringing you back into the church?
Yeah, it was not just that it made me familiar with the Gospel. I mean, it made me love the Gospel. It made me understand that this is where you can find the word, capital W, the Logos. And eventually I am very grateful to the professor that he insisted on us studying Lithuanian instead of Latvian. So I met my wife in Lithuania during my studies there, or after I had finished my studies there, I met my wife, and we actually met in a bookstore called Aura, you know, Greek name, bookstore.
Yep.
It was like I've said before, coming events cast their shadows before. And she learned Greek very quickly, and she could right away realize that there is something with the faith, with the Orthodox faith, that is exactly what she was looking for. She's of originally atheist background, and then she was baptized Roman Catholic, and she was not completely complete, so to say. And she had spoken about that with her, with the priest of the parish, the Roman Catholic parish that she belonged to. And when he found out that her fiancé is a Greek. No, wait, I'm her fiancé, right? I was her fiancé, right?
You were her fiancé, yes.
Yeah, okay, her fiancé was Greek, then he was delighted. And he gave his blessing, so to say, to the marriage. And when she told him that she intended to become fully Orthodox, not just for the wedding, he was actually very happy about it. And this shows something this shows something to me, at least. Very nice guy, actually, this priest. And so we got married beneath the Acropolis at a church called St. Catherine's. Some of your listeners maybe have visited this wonderful church that is some 1,000 years old, 1,000 years old church, in front of the ruins of a temple that is 200 years old or something like that. And the whole thing outside the Dennis Institute in Athens. I mean, it's and St. Catherine's. I mean, it was all so predictable, so to say, that we should make books, and the aura was there, so to say. And so when we were living in Denmark and we were not happy of not having services every day, we really missed this parish life. Parish is the most important point. It's the most important thing in our lives. That's how we feel it, and that's how we live it here in Greece. We live around the church, actually, and in the church. So I guess this is my journey back to where I belong and where every human soul belongs to. Back to Word, back to Logos.
Now, Dionysius, once you kind of rediscovered your faith and came back to attending services regularly and things, what changed in your life? What differences were there in you?
No void, no emptiness. That's the most important thing of all. I mean, it did not matter anything. I mean, everything made sense. And this was actually a gut feeling that I had from the very beginning of this, of what you call a rediscovery. I would call it discovery. I wouldn't call it rediscovery. Many of us take our faith for granted, and we do not grasp anything of its essence. So this being away actually brought me closer to the church, because I now, you know, as Greeks, you always are surrounded, not always, but most of the places you are surrounded by churches, or you will always find a church. So you don't get to have a physical lack of the presence of God in this sense of the church, of the Ark. And living in Denmark, although there are plenty of splendid Lutheran churches or churches that go back to the Roman Catholic period of Denmark, still you don't have this sense of, I at least didn't, and my wife neither, you don't have this sense of presence of God in those worship houses. It felt strange not to have churches around, and not just churches, but canonical churches. So, but then eventually we found out that we could not live without the church, or outside the church, or we could not live in the outskirts of the church, so to say, because we had services. There were services in Denmark. There are services in Denmark. In Greek, just four times a year. And if we're lucky, maybe five. And in Old Slavonic, it was more often. But whenever there was no service, we had to find a service somewhere, either in Romanian or in Serbian or whatever. Any language was fine for us. And many times we had to travel to Sweden in order to attend service. My children loved that, because I always took them, I took our bicycle on the train, and we should go to Sweden, and then off the train, and by bicycle we got to the church, either Romanian or Serbian. And so we were looking like for God, but he was looking more for us than we did for him. So after some years at the Greek embassy in Denmark, working there, my wife decided we had to come back to Greece, and we decided with her too. She can hear me now, so she won't hear and listen to this program, I hope. So after 20 years in Denmark, on the 29th of August 2007, we made our way back to Greece. And ever since we landed here, we have felt his presence and his abundant... I mean, it's... he has really blessed us with so many, not just things, but spiritual experiences or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's a wonderful life. You know, our listeners don't know that we hardly sleep. Not because we are trying to be ascetic or anything, but because there's no reason to lose time. We really have to, we enjoy working for him. and you know what we do? We do, maybe you wanted to ask me that?
Well, I will definitely get into that. And I know you have I was kind of letting you talk, but I know you have a ministry that you've established since you've come back to Greece, and that's your main stay of, living, and that is a Orthodox children's book publishing company.
Yeah, and we had published books before while still living in Denmark. We had three of our books, two books with saints and two other books, at the same publishing house, one of the best here in Greece, maybe the best. Orthodox publishing house, the one that had made that had published here from Iville to Uville, Akritas Publications. May God bless them; they really do a wonderful job. The reason why our first Saints book with Akritas, as this wonderful publishing company is called, was a bestseller, was sold out within 10 months in Greece. This is very quick. And but we were so lucky that they did not wish to publish our prayer book. My prayer book, which is totally, for Greece, completely unseen concept. Every publisher avoids publishing anything in the old way of writing, the old form of writing. But we decided that we could see with our own children that our children needed to see the prayers the way they are, the way they were written by our saints. So what we decided to do is to have the illustrations and the prayers in the first part of the book, and the second part, translations and explanations of the prayers and of five of the most important feasts of the year. And nobody wanted to publish it, thank God, as they believed it would be a fiasco. So we decided to publish it ourselves. I mean, ourselves. He published everything for us, and you know who I mean when I say he. Because we had so many obstacles in publishing it, and so many difficulties, and so many hurdles to overcome, and they were all set aside by in miraculous ways every single time. And the book was finally published in 2007, end of 2007, and it was last year, I mean, within less than a year, the book was sold out. And we have really
which
published
book was that?
A lot. My prayer book, which is illustrated by Egle, my wife, Egle Katerini. And we did something new, something that maybe in the States or some other places is done, but here it was not done, or if it was done, it was not explicitly named that it was done. What we did was to apply control of dogmatic accuracy of the illustrations. And we did that because we were not happy with what we saw in some publications. I won't name any, but I don't remember any, but we had this feeling that the illustrations, as they talk to the heart of the reader and especially the children, it's so important that their dogmatic accuracy is of paramount importance. So we thought, and our spiritual father was in total agreement with us on that. And so we had we have the blessing to have one of the most famous writers on dogmatical matters and anti-heretical matters, so to say, heresies and so forth, Mr. Kokoris. He's at the same parish here, Dimitrios Kokoris, and has beautiful books. Has written the best book you can find on the Greek monasteries. And he checked everything. Every time we had an illustration ready, he would check that. And before we were ready with the illustration, he would check whether everything was dogmatically correct. And so the book was printed and is now printed and already in its second edition. And it sells well, too. Continues to sell very well. And what we really enjoy is that is to realize that my prayer book is now, as it is now, published in English too. That it seems to be appealing to the English-speaking public, and namely the U.S. Readers or faithful.
And just real quick, kind of just so I can describe it to our listeners, the book is a children's prayer book, and you have illustrations or iconography mixed in with the prayers that kind of match up with the prayers,
mm-hmm.
and you also have explanations
right.
of the prayers
mm-hmm.
with illustrations so that children can learn the prayers and understand what they're praying and why they're praying
exactly.
and who they're praying it to.
We're not theologians. Most parents don't even have time to see the children, so it's hard to find time and resources to find out of theological, dogmatical matters. So everything is ready there for a parent or a grandparent or an older brother or sister. We have seen that with our children. Our oldest son the other day at Theophany, he sat among his sister and one of his brothers, the one that is old enough to understand, 2.5 years old, and he was reading to them what Epiphany was or is. And so the youngest one was looking at the picture, and he understood everything that his brother, his older brother, was explaining to him. And this is a book that we have been amazed by the amount of older people that buy it and do not give it to any child. And keep it for themselves, because dogmatical matters such as the Holy Trinity and other things, essential parts of our faith, are given there, ready to take, so to say. And we feel really blessed to have been able to do this book, and May God bless all those who have helped us. May God bless even more those who were an obstacle in making it, because that way it got even more importance. And may God bless all those who will read it. And when they'll read it, may they please pray for us and for our parish of St. Dimitrios. So,
and you have three other books, St. Dionysius,
yes,
St. Catherine, and St. Christopher.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to know why we published exactly, namely, those books and not some other books?
Well, I can guess, but you might as well tell our listeners.
Okay. Well, my name is Dionysius, and I come from the island, as I said, I was conceived at the island of Zakynthos, which is 200 kilometers westward from here. In the Ionian Sea, an island that has never been occupied by an Islamic force, an Islamic country, or whatever you want to call it. an island where freedom is cherished. Our most important poets come from there. Dionysios Solomos comes from our island. And the most important person that we have the blessing to have among us, we feel him as what he is, alive. Saint Dionysius of Zakynthos, he is the saint of forgiveness. As we are telling, half of the islanders of Zakynthos are called Dionysios. The other half are called Dionysia, because half men, half women. you didn't get it? Okay. Half of the population of the island are, roughly, half of the population are men, and the other half are women, of course. And that's why only half of the population is called Dionysios.
Got it.
Okay.
So,
bad joke.
That's Dionysius. No, I got you.
Yeah. And I think he's very important to everybody, because you can't even say our Father if the Lord's Prayer, if you haven't forgiven. You can't. So you can't become a Christian. You can't be a Christian. You can't live as a Christian. You can't even pretend to be a Christian if you do not forgive. Am I right?
You're very right.
So we thought we should start with him, and believe me, he gave us lots of chances to learn how to forgive in the course of making the book. And this is actually a very nice book, and we're very pleased to hear that it is liked at the States too. And one essential characteristic of our books is that we decided, even before we came to Greece, that all our books would be published not only in Greek but in English too. And you know, it's because we so often felt a need to have books, and we thought it's so good that we're going back to Greece, but think of all those people who live abroad, mostly in English-speaking countries, and do not intend to come back to Greece, who are cradle Orthodox, as you say, and do not have, do have lots of resources to learn the faith, but do not have these particular books that we intended to make. So from a very early stage on, we decided to print them both in Greek and English. And we're thinking also of another group of potential readers, tourists. 13 million people visit Greece during the year. 13 million from abroad, or maybe even more now. I don't know. And these people would be so important if the best souvenir they could take with them is our faith, a faith that really liberates the soul. And then we thought of all those Greek children that learned English from a very early age, from 9 years old as latest, and they learn nothing about the faith in English. So we thought that we have different groups that could possibly use our books. And we can see that we haven't got any tourists yet buying our books, but if you pray for us, maybe they'll begin. And but we have people from abroad. We thought Greeks abroad would buy our books, but we find out that more indigenous Americans do buy our books, not of Greek origin, so to say. And we see that slowly even English language evening schools begin to buy our books in English. Our other book, St. Catherine, is the book we decided to publish after St. Dionysius, because it's my wife's saint, and she is my saint too. How come? Well, I was born 25th of November, and here in Greece we celebrate St. Catherine on the 25th, and I was very sorry as a kid that I was born the 25th of November, sorry, not December, November, because no kid would come to my birthday as all their mothers were called Catherine. So they all had to stay home and have a feast of St. Catherine at home. So St. Catherine really gave me a Catherine and the possibility to enjoy and to get to know her really well, I think.
And you have another book, St. Christopher.
Yes, St. Christopher is our third saint's book. And we decided to make St. Christopher exactly because he is so important for us in Greece, here in Greece, and not only for us here in Greece, any place where people travel or drive or walk or visit or whatever, or fly. I think we need a saint we can turn to and talk to him before we travel or before we move from one place to another. And we also need St. Christopher because he's so important. It took us such a long journey to find Jesus, to find the church. And the same thing has happened to St. Christopher. So to all these people who are doing a journey from point A to the church, St. Christopher is a great companion, not only because he has gone through the same things, but because he really can feel what we feel as in our search for a true leader that can bring change, real change in our lives, and turn us from wild into saints. St. Christopher is really amazing, and I'm so happy that we have, yes, I was so happy that we have this book because the illustrations are so beautiful. We're very happy about the outcome of this book. As your listeners and I hope our future readers will be able to see, we print our books on the best possible materials, and we print them at the best printing machines. Actually, my prayer book and St. Christopher are printed on the best printing machines here in Greece, some of the best in the world, actually. And it is all printed, and the whole work is done, the whole production is done here in Greece. So by buying our books, you're buying a piece of Greece, so to say, that is so ecumenical. So it's a common treasure, so to say, our saints. I don't know. I really am happy, and I feel so blessed to devote all my life to this work, and I hope that he will not. And you know, when I say he, you know who I'm talking about. That he will keep me here, alive and working with him, for him, for as many years as he thinks that I. That he can stand my laziness and my idleness. So please, all your listeners out there, if they could pray for us.
Your website where people can find your books is?
It's so simple. OrthodoxChildrensBooks.com. OrthodoxChildrensBooks.com. I mean, it's obvious.
Well, you can find it on the website. And Dionysius, I've got to wrap this program up, so you have a great day.
Yeah, I hope so too. God bless, and please have us in your prayers.
Thank you for listening to Journeys to Orthodoxy, a production of the Icon New Media Network, where Orthodox Christianity is the future of American spirituality. Would you like to share your journey with us? Please do so by contacting us at journeys@iconnewmedianetwork.com. Journeys to Orthodoxy can be heard on the Orthodox Christian Network at www.myocn.net.